is this? An offering to Poseidon? The Greeks are praying for a safe return home.
I hope the sea god spits in their offering. Let's them all drown at the bottom of the sea.
This is a gift. We should take it to the temple of Poseidon.
I think we should burn it.
Burn it, my friend. It's a gift to the gods.
Father, burn it.
History is strange. It's alien. And it won't give us what we would like to have.
Hour three of our Tuesday on this April 23rd of 2024, brought to you by the McPherson Financial Group. Stories in play, linked up at BillMick.com. We're past those now, though, and there are also links there to the DaveBowmanShow.com and to Dave's history bibliography. As Dave Bowman is back with us, been back all day, sooner than anticipated from his knee surgery, and that's a great thing. And it's time for Dave Does History. Dave, what are we doing in this hour?
Is that because I'm a Sooner?
Yes, it is. Now you're a Sun Devil.
This is true.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, Bill, it's easy to get lost in history, in this idea that history is on this date, this person did this thing, and this was the result. And, you know, I find myself falling into that trap sometimes. Sometimes we're so focused on singular events that we miss what Will Durant would have called the lessons of history. And this particular week, of course, we've been talking a lot about that. This is the first day of Passover. Last night was the traditional Seders and the likes of that. And you know, when it comes to the Passover, there are really only two commandments. There's a lot of traditions. There's a lot of rabbinical rules, but there's really only two commandments. One, you have to eat the matzah, which I did. In the scriptures, you will do this. And the second commandment is to teach your children. And I think that there's some deeper meaning to that, especially now, because I wonder how many people have actually been taught these things that would have established deep roots in their belief systems that have now caused them, because they don't have those deep roots, how much of that teaching of those sorts of things have we done that has now led people to mistakenly, in my view, protest things that they shouldn't be protesting. But at the same time, something is lacking in their education. Something is lacking in that teaching of history, that teaching of the past. And when we look at the past that way, it becomes somewhat different. The reason we teach history is not because of Satayana's quote about those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. The reason we teach history is to inculcate values of our society. Mm-hmm. This was true of the Romans. It was true of the Greeks. It was true of the Persians. It was true of the Chinese, the Buddhists, all the way down into American history, which was taught to us, and it was used to inculcate those values on which we wanted to build our society. Now, sometimes the history that was used to teach us those things was less than accurate. I mean, what's the value?
Into the realm of myths.
Well, what's the value that we learn as Americans from learning that George Washington chopped down a cherry tree and when asked by his father said, "I cannot tell a lie."
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a bad value to have?
Not at all.
Did he cut down the cherry tree?
Probably not.
Don't care. Does it matter? In the same way, mythology, classical mythology, was seen as history. These were not myths to the people who were learning these things, and they inculcated them, of course, with those values that were important enough that if I say the word inculcate again, you can feel free to slap me across the thing there. But the bottom line is that to the folks who were learning these things and who were developing these values and these cultures, these myths were every bit as true as history. And so we turn to one particular myth. And the reason we turn to this myth is because tomorrow, April 24th, as established by a gentleman by the name of Aristophanes, who was one of the most fascinating characters in history. We don't have time to go into all of his things, but there's a great section by Carl Sagan about him. His nickname was the Beta, Aristophanes the Beta, because he was the second best at everything. And it was he that was in charge of the library at Alexandria, and he calculated the dates. He took all the history and all this stuff, and he ran back the dates, and he's the one that came up with the date of April 24th in the year 1153 BCE as the day that the Trojans got up in the morning, walked out to the walls of this war that had been going on for 9 years, and all the Greeks, or Achaeans as they would have called them, were gone. But in their place was this giant wooden horse. And some people said, oh, it's a sign from the gods. But one guy said, I don't trust the Greeks, especially when they're bringing us gifts.
And we pick it up in 60 seconds on WMMB. Dave Bowman leads Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. So we are to beware Greeks bearing gifts, Dave.
Well, certainly some people thought we should. And as we kind of talk about this, I want us to think more in philosophical terms, thinking about history rather than an actual date, April 24th, which again, maybe Aristophanes got it right. Maybe he didn't. Who knows? And more importantly, who cares? It really affects how we see things. This is something that I tell people all the time when it comes to the founding of America. To the founders of America, the great histories of the Romans, the great Roman mythologies, were not myths. They were history. This is what we based our belief systems on. Are our belief systems valid? Yes. So should we try to understand those beliefs a little bit more? I think we should, and that's one of the reasons why I talk so much about particularly Roman mythology when it comes to the United States and the history of the United States. When this horse was out there on the beach, you have this long war. We're told that the war was 9 years long, and it was devastating, it was tragic, and it was all over what? Does anybody remember what the Trojan War was over?
Helen
of Troy, the most beautiful woman in the world. And of course, this was caused because the gods got together and had a dinner one night and didn't invite one of the goddesses, who was mad. And so she tossed the golden apple in there that said to the fairest on there. And of course, Zeus can't make a decision. So he has a human being as the fall guy try to make the decision, who of course chooses the wrong thing. Athena promises him the most beautiful woman in the world, which happens to be Helen of Troy. And so we're told that this 9-year war goes on over this kidnapping / eloping of Paris and Helen. Now, does that make sense in anybody's world? If you were the Trojans, this massive empire, and all of a sudden you woke up one morning and the Greeks are all over your beaches saying, look, this is because of this woman. Wouldn't you just say, well, here's the woman, and oh, by the way, here's the guy too? Would you really fight a war for 9 years over this?
I'm thinking no.
So we can conclude then that probably isn't the real cause. And there aren't any, professional archaeologists or anthropologists who would tell you that the Trojan War didn't happen. It clearly did. But does a war go on like that? And so you start questioning, why then do they need all this backstory? Why can't they tell you what's really going on here? Why do they need this backstory about Helen? Why do they need to tell you all these stories about these great heroes who roam this war back and forth, and all these tales of woe? And, there are so many tales in the Trojan War that we just don't even pay attention to. The sacrifice of Iphigenia, the daughter of, I'm going to get it wrong, Agamemnon, if I remember right, but things like that are just so horrifying that it makes you wonder, couldn't we just have a straight explanation? These guys were good, these guys were bad, and we had to fight a war. Wouldn't that make more sense?
There was no real documentation that we could see about this.
Well, there is, but when you've got 3 books, written about the Trojan War, some of which, by the way, influenced the United States. The Aeneid, which is, of course, Virgil's retelling of this, tells the story of Troy after the war, and it's the Trojans that make their way to Rome and found the Roman Empire. And of course, that becomes very influential to us.
Sure.
So all these values that we're talking about, all these systems that become part of who we are in play here, and they're important. And of course, these are the things we talk about when we say we need to teach our children. We could have taught our children the real reasons for the war, but it's
would not have been as interested, maybe. Maybe they didn't care for the actual history. They liked the stories better.
Well, when you're trying to motivate a country to stay at war for 9 years, which is better, this fanciful tale of insults and all that kind of stuff, or, you know, the reality of things? And the problem is, of course, that the reality of things is much duller than these stories will become. And at the end of the day, when the Trojans see this horse, they start arguing about whether or not this is really a gift, whether it really means anything. And one guy says, don't bring that horse in. But of course, he gets killed. So the gods must mean for us to bring this horse in, which they do. And the war ends.
Because and not as they would have expected.
Not as they would have expected or hoped.
We dig some more as we continue on Bill Mick Live, and we'll see what's happening and what the lessons are to learn when Dave Does History right here. McPherson Financial Group bringing you this hour of the show. Dave Bowman with us with Dave Does History. And we're talking about the Trojan horse. Dave, where are we at now?
So as we look at this whole thing, let us keep in mind that we are trying to learn, as Will Durant said, the lessons of history. What can we take from this today in thinking about the past? What is it that applies to us today? And of course, it being Passover, the two commandments of Passover, eat matzo and tell your children, which for thousands of years people did. And they used these stories to tell them what was going on or why things were happening and what they should learn from those things. Prior to the Greeks and the Trojans, who were for all practical purposes one people, they just split on either side of the Aegean Sea. Prior to their rise, as it were, you had two other great empires in the ancient Near East. These empires, of course, were the Hittites, who you may be somewhat familiar with, and the Egyptians, who you should be very familiar with, especially at Passover. These two powers, based in the Bronze Age, but in the very early elements of the Iron Age, were able to take the power of iron and transform their empires into very big military, very powerful empires. And of course, they were in conflict most of the time, leading to the Battle of Kadesh, which is one of the most storied battles in the history of humankind. But following that battle, both Egypt and the Hittite Empire start to kind of collapse like a flan in the cupboard. They don't have the internal structures that they need to grow as a society. And so these two empires collapse. That creates a vacuum, which all of a sudden you've got the Trojans and the Achaeans, as the Greeks would have been known then, who are looking at what used to be the Hittite Empire, which is just full of iron ore. Oh, look at all that iron that we could go get. Now, the truth is that up until this point, Troy and Greece, which are again essentially the same peoples, have been very cooperative. They have the same gods. They speak the same languages. They have the same myths. They have very much similar ideologies in the way of doing things, and they're very good trading partners. But now, all of a sudden, you see the opportunity for power, because iron is power. And like it or not, and it's something we don't like to consider, power is the predominant universal value throughout human history. We want it to be freedom, but reality is that it's power. And so both of these nations see an opportunity to grab all this Hittite iron and become the dominant power. And so the war between Troy and Greece, Achaeans, is actually over iron. But how do you motivate a population to keep fighting a war over iron for all those years?
So they stole our woman idea becomes very attractive.
It becomes very purposeful, almost in a propaganda type way. And then you have all the other stories that go along with this that feed into this idea that this war is so much more than just iron. This war is about values. It's about our gods. It's about our way of life. It's about all these things that matter to us, when in reality, what it's about is getting the iron and becoming the dominant power. But the people who have to keep funding this war, and the soldiers who have to keep rowing over there to Troy to get slaughtered on the beaches for 9 years, have to be convinced that this is something more than that. And so you develop this whole mythology of somehow or another we were wronged by Paris, who offended us. And so you have this element here of convincing people to continue to fight a war that they don't really want to fight, because we don't really need to fight. We could have had a trading relationship with Troy and just gotten the same thing. But instead, because power is the universal value and we seek power more than anything else, we have to justify this in the minds of the people that we keep digging into their pockets to fund this ongoing, never-ending, constantly going on and never really seeming to get anywhere war. Sound even vaguely familiar?
Yeah, it does. All right, Dave, where are we going?
So if we look at this myth of the Trojan War, this 9 year long battle that ends with this horse on the beach and has all of these tragic stories that lead into this. And we say to ourselves, but this was really just about power. It was really just about iron. Even 5,000 years ago, people were probably not going to go along with that unless they had some reason to, especially in the Athenian democracies where the average citizen had some say in this. Can you imagine the arguments that they would have been having about why are we doing this again?
Talk radio was a buzz then.
Yeah. And so you have to create this propaganda ideal. And of course, what I want us to do today is think about these things. If this has been going on since the Trojan War, in the 11th century BCE, why are we surprised that it's still going on now as we pass another $68 billion to go to a war that, to many of us, makes absolutely no sense at all? I mean, it just doesn't. I'm willing to have the discussions, but you're never going to convince me that A, Ukraine is going to win, or that B, I should even care. But at the same time, now you've got this thing going on in Ivy League colleges, and all of this stuff adds together, and you start saying to yourself, okay, where's the delineating line between the mythology behind this? And as I was talking to Bill during the break, there's a very subtle thing going on with these rallies. They're not anti-Jewish, anti-Israel rallies. They're all very much labeled. Pro-Palestinian students, pro-Palestinian rallies, pro-this, pro-that.
To give it a positive spin.
To give it that positive propaganda-type spin. How do we learn then to define that difference between where that propaganda is and where reality is. Because until we learn to understand that, are we going to believe the stories of a 9-year war over a woman being quote unquote kidnapped, who apparently wanted to go along anyway? Or are we going to understand that the universal value in history is power? And what exactly is the power that they are seeking? Because that's going to crack the answer to what the lesson of all this is for history.
And we continue with Dave Does History in moments right here on Bill Mick Live. Stay with us. Dave Bowman finishing up today in history with us. Dave, where are we at in this Trojan War?
Wouldn't it be great to have a Planet of the Apes version of the Trojan War?
Yeah.
It would. What would you leave on the beach?
A mock-up of a human full of apes.
Be interesting to see. Again, as we kind of close out this day, again, it's not so much the date, April 24th, 1153 BCE, where the Trojan horse appears on the beach and Troy falls because they mistakenly bring it in. That's not really what I want you to take from this. If you do, great. What I want you to do is be thinking about history. What is it that is trying to be taught to me here? And what is it that's distracting me from the values which I'm supposed to actually be taking from these stories? When you look at the Trojan War in its totality, it's every bit as brutal as any war you can imagine. But we're constantly being told that this is necessary because of this great insult which Paris has made. But even Odysseus, right, the Odyssey, even mm-hmm. Odysseus doesn't want to go fight this war. He thinks it's stupid. And he has to be coerced by having his family threatened to go fight in the war that he doesn't want to go fight in. At the end of the war, of course, the Trojan horse is there on the beach, and there's a big discussion about what do we do with it? Is it a votive offering from the Greeks? Is it what is this thing? And, of course, the Trojans convince themselves over the arguments that beware Greeks bearing gifts, convince themselves that this is the point at which we've won, and of course it turns into tragedy. But I think the most important lesson of that is the Greeks don't actually win. Even though they conquer Troy and they destroy Troy, nothing good comes of this. The Greeks never actually managed to become that Iron Age empire that they were seeking to become. All of this mythology, all of this effort, all of this expense, all of this death ends up being for nothing. The Greeks never really conquer the way that they thought that the power, that universal value, would give them the ability to do. But those reasons live on. And since they worked, they become repetitive. And we go throughout history with people telling you, well, this is why we have to do this. And sometimes those reasons make sense. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes, like Odysseus, we have to be coerced into supporting things that we don't necessarily want to support. But sometimes we're eager and willing to listen to whatever nonsense we're told because, you know, our border is the Russian border, as we were told by a congressperson this week. You know that's not true. I know that's not true. Even he knows that's not true. But it's
unless you're Sarah Palin.
Yeah. But it didn't stop him from waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House, did it?
Yeah, exactly.
These are the questions that we should be asking ourselves. This didn't work out well for the Greeks. It didn't work out well for the Trojans. And while those subsequent histories may have played their role, well, they did play their role in the foundation, the establishment of our values as Americans, we have to be careful to understand that there were real lessons here, one of which was, don't fall for the stupid lies. Use your heads. Think about things, because otherwise you're going to be standing there on the beach looking at this big horse going, I don't trust people bearing gifts. And consequently, you might end up, you know, losing something that you thought you had actually won.
Dave, let's get a quick call in as we continue. Keith is in Valkyria. Morning, Keith.
Hey, good morning, guys. Before I get to my question about the Trojan War, I just want to comment on the Ukraine War. Sometime last year when I was talking to two old Vietnam vet friends of mine that had fallen for the lie that Russia was on the ropes and Ukraine was just about ready to win the war, but, you know, because Russia didn't have enough soldiers. And I had to say, are you guys acquainted with like mathematics and population statistics? Because what you just said is absolutely impossible. And, you know, like 8 months later, Russia is still in there strong fighting. So there's really something weird going on there, because these two guys are usually pretty smart, and they fell for that hook, line, and sinker. But my question about the Trojan War is, Dave, for a long time, from what I understand, nobody thought the Trojan War happened, that it was basically a myth. And then sometime, I think, during the 19th century, an archaeologist proved that Troy was a reality. I remember something about him running around a giant dirt mound or something, to time how long it took to go around it, and he discovered the city of Troy that way, I think. Do you have any information what brought us to realize that the Trojan War was actually a reality and not just the mythological tale?
That's an interesting, you get the same question out of the Bible. Well, how do we know Jerusalem actually existed as the capital of a Jewish state? And again, you go back to archaeology starts with this premise, okay? You have this story generally found in the Bible, or in this particular case, the Iliad, the Odyssey, and the Aeneid. And people start looking around for things. And as biblical archaeology began to prove the existence of these things there, despite the fact that they will try to tell you today that they don't exist, the same thing happens in Troy. Now, you have a little bit different difficulties because of the geopolitical situation with the Ottoman Empire and the likes of that. But yes, eventually they find the city that they prove is Troy. Now you got to prove that there's a war going on. That's a little bit more complex, because the only reason we know that there's a war between Egypt and the Hittites is because the Pharaoh wrote it down. He put up a big stele that describes his victory at the Battle of Kadesh, which probably wasn't as glorious as he makes it sound. But there's very little, you know, there's nothing left of the battle. I mean, even if you go to Europe today and try to prove that there was necessarily a battle during World War II, the archaeological evidence may not be there, because, you know, stuff gets cleaned up and likes that. But yes, starting in the 1970s, there was a large investigation, archaeological investigation, that went over there and began to trace not just Troy, but the other minor cities that were part of Troy. And see, that's the other big thing, the Trojan War. But Troy wasn't just a city. Troy was an empire. And so they began to find the rest of the Trojan Empire. And so through that, you clearly have this conflict. You clearly have this conflict over iron. And it just sort of falls into place. Now, I'm not an archaeologist, and I've never actually been to Turkey, although it's on my bucket list. So to answer that question, yeah, it takes archaeologists, it takes them a long time. This isn't Indiana Jones, you know, where everything is just in one piece and stuff like that. It takes time to put all this stuff together, but they do.
Very good. Let's go to line two. You're up next on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Good morning. Mario Cape Canaveral. Great discussion. You know, what I'm taking away from this is that that we have to watch for the lies. And the lies look like truth. And, you know, each time you said BCE, I thought of grammar school teachers that I know, because I have relatives who are grammar school teachers, and they're telling their children that BCE stands for before the Christian era, and CE stands for the Christian era. And I thought, that's kind of like guerrilla warfare going on right here in our own country against what is essentially a Trojan horse, lies, and so forth and so on. The attempt to de-Christianize Western civilization by just going to the calendar and say, and getting rid of the idea that Western civilization is a Judeo-Christian based civilization. It's crazy what's going on.
Well, I agree the lesson, Mario, is to watch for the lies. I'm not sure that where you went with that are the lies we're looking for. I'm not sure there's a lie involved there.
See, it doesn't have anything to do with Christian era. It's common era.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the common era. But that's, you know, again, it's...
Just because, Dave, you Jews don't want to refer to Christ when you refer to these dates historically. That's all.
Yeah, well, you know, scientific principles and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if that's the lesson we're going to take out of it, I guess... There's not much I can do for you, but yeah, you know, there you go.
I'm going to go protest at a college now.
You know, to follow on to what...
The other thing is that our media helps perpetuate the stories that were sold on all of this, and sometimes as fully willing participants, and other times maybe they're the fools passing the message.
It makes you wonder. You got to, and it's very difficult to determine where is that line between mythology, propaganda, and reality. Where is that line? And when you look at Ukraine right now, where is that line? I have said since day one of this war, Russia's already won this war. And
yes,
Ukraine cannot win this war. And yet, we keep coming up with reasons to send money over there. And how many of those reasons are just, well, Paris took Helen, and so we've got to keep fighting this insult, because otherwise, if we don't, the gods will inflict worse things upon us. Not sure that that's not the same lesson, and yet the Greeks continue to do that to their own demise.
And are our politicians any better than those of that era in making these decisions and what's right? And I'm thinking, probably not.
I would say they're probably worse, because they're not nearly as accountable as Greek city-states were.
Or maybe as educated.
Yeah.
Dave Bowman, I'm glad you're recovering well. I appreciate all 3 hours today, and I look forward to seeing you next Tuesday.
Looking forward to it myself.